Before we get into today's show, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to share your thoughts and opinions on our work. If you have feedback, ideas, or suggestions regarding any part of our overall platform, we'd love to hear from you. Please don't hesitate to reach out. We're listening. Your insights help us to grow and ensure that we're making the greatest impact possible. To share your thoughts, go to insightmyanmar.org/feedback.
Hello. Hi, Salo. Thanks for joining our Inside Myanmar podcast. My name is Yi. I will be the host for this episode today. So today we have here is Salo Polak. He is the founder of the Philanthropy Connections Foundation. So Salo, if you could start by telling us a bit about the organization.
Okay, well, the organization started December 2011. It was established first in the Netherlands, where I'm from, and then later, 2016, we were registered as a Thai foundation as well. The foundation is very much a bottom-up foundation. We listen very carefully to what it is that the organizations and the communities we work with tell us what their problems are. We listen very carefully to that because we know that each community has their own problems. So we listen to what the needs are. We listen to what they think the solutions can be for the problems they face. And then they go through a very thorough due diligence process. And if we believe that they are an organization or a project we can work with, and that what they do will benefit the, in many cases, underprivileged and impoverished communities that they work with, and help them, then we will try and find support for them. We work with sponsors, with donors, and they give us the money to support the projects that we choose to support.
So from what I've gathered is that PCF is different in a way that you go out and seek to the extremely vulnerable community who needs it. It's not like a application process or anything, but so it's so special, and I want to know about how do you find them?
Okay, well, I've been here for quite a while, almost 20 years now in Thailand. And before, I've been working for another organization, and I created my own network already. So the first project that we supported were found through my network. Later on, we hired Thai staff who used their own network and searched for good organization, good projects online, whatever it takes to get to know deserving projects. And the reason why it's not an application process that we use is that we are of the opinion that if people can find us, they can find other sponsors as well. And so maybe they do not need us. We try to look for projects that do not have the resources to find other support. So in many cases, we support projects and organizations, communities that do not have any other support.
And so you are, the organization is based in Thailand, and so when you go out and seek these organizations, and you will have native speakers who would go out and find these organizations that need help and have no resources, for example, like English skills or other proposal writing skills, for example, correct?
That is correct. It's not like this that none of the projects that we work with do not have any English-speaking people within their community or within their project. But it is true that we have a local project team who speak the languages of the communities that we serve.
Which region is it? So it's more reachable from where you are based in Thailand? Is it the Thailand-Myanmar border or what other countries?
Cambodia as well. So we're based in Thailand and we have a project made basically in northern Thailand. We have projects in Siem Reap province as well, and indeed in Myanmar, where we've been working almost from the start through the network that we have. Yeah. And that is
and
mainly.
What is your connection with Myanmar? Because you do a lot of these, this is very niche. In this kind of way of seeking for organizations or, you know, people, Myanmar is a big country where donations are a big part of their life. And also a lot of Southeast Asian nations, donations are part of people's life, either religious or other personal reasons. But this kind of seeking out for people in need who could use your help is niche in that sense. So why these countries? Why Myanmar, the border region, and then Cambodia?
Well, when I first came here, like I said, I worked with another organization, and through that other organization, I was connected to people in the three countries that I mentioned. And this is also the case for Myanmar. Of course, since 2011, we also got in touch with other people through the networking that we did. And each of the project partners that we work with have another dynamic, have another story. So it's not like, okay, we have this template, we use that, we seek out, and that is successful. No, each of the projects that we work with, and that goes for Thailand, for Myanmar, and for Cambodia, have their own story. So if you're looking for a way that we work to find this project, the thing is, we have very many different ways to connect with the project that we support.
I'm interested in the mother tongue-based education program that you do. English is my second language. Burmese is my first. So sometimes at the beginning, when English as a second language learner, a lot of things I need to translate in my head, and sometimes it's lost in translation. And when we think and learn big concepts in science and mathematics, it is sometimes it's easier to comprehend in the mother tongue language, I understand. But you're not talking about just Burmese as the mother tongue language. You're talking about different other ethnic languages. So I want to know more about that programs that you do.
Okay. Well, the mother tongue-based multilingual education project that we are supporting is based here in Thailand. And many of the ethnic groups in the hill communities, the mountain communities here in Thailand, they only speak their own languages. So to talk about Aka, Lizu, Lahu, Karen, etc. These are small villages, small communities, where indeed the children are being brought up with only their own language. So they speak that with their parents, their families, their friends, and then they go to school. And most of the schools that they go to are government schools. And the government schools have government teachers who speak Thai. So what happened was that many of the children could not understand their Thai teacher. They learned nothing. And many of the ethnic groups that we work with and that are located in these communities are underserved, underprivileged. And if they don't learn anything in school because they don't understand the teacher, it's very hard for them to escape the cycle of poverty. So what this program that we are supporting does is they have created a very innovative, playful program whereby local people, not necessarily teachers, but people with the skills and the capacity of becoming teachers, are being trained with that special curriculum whereby the children are being taught in their local language. But at the same time, these local teachers cooperate with the Thai teachers to make sure that the children are being taught Thai as well. And within a year and a half, 2 years maybe, the children will be fluent in Thai as well. And that will help them to get better opportunities in life. They can continue their study because they live in Thailand and Thai is the main language, and get not only better education, but obviously also the better jobs. So that is basically what happened, is teach children who do not speak Thai in the country, the language in the country that they are living in. And that is all the projects that we support are important, but this is very clear how this helps underprivileged community to do better.
It is so amazing that this kind of program exists for underprivileged, and also for language barrier is a real obstacle that a lot of people have to jump through hoops for. Mm-hmm. Have you always been interested in humanitarian?
I could say so, yeah. I mean, I can tell you a bit about the story. I'll try to keep it short, but
yes, please.
as a teenager, I already saw many things that were going wrong in the world. There was so much injustice and so many people suffering of injustice that I always had the wish to do something about that. Now, as an 18-year-old, I traveled overland to India. I saw so much poverty. So when I got home, back to the Netherlands after a trip of about 9 months, I wanted to do something about that. And it took quite a while and different ways in which I tried to find my bearings, so to speak, to finally come up with the idea that I wanted to create my own organization where I could do things in the way I thought would help effectively and cost efficiently. So it's been a long road, but yes, to answer your question, I've always been interested in humanitarian aid and giving equal chances to people in living in poverty and in underprivileged situations. Yeah.
Is it for any religious reasons?
No, not at all. I'm not a religious person at all, and we do not have a hidden agenda. We are very much, our organization, we are of the, the philosophy that if people need help, you help them. People are in need, you help them. We don't want anything back. So there's no question about religion. People in need help. Let's try to help them. That's the whole idea behind what we're doing.
Yeah, I think Burmese people would agree that good deeds are worth spreading. Recently, during the earthquake, a lot of people helped each other. A lot of international NGOs, China and other NGOs also helped, but in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake, people will say they only have each other. So they helped food, shelter, the ones with the buildings that are still standing, try to help the ones without the homes anymore. So indeed, good deeds are worth spreading. I want to go back to your origin. So you're from Netherlands, Dutch origin, and you travel to other parts of the world and you saw what you wish to change in the world, and you did it. It is like, what was that, your teenage dream?
Well, yeah, coming back from the trip to overland to India, I always wanted to do good, to help people. And like I said, I tried that in several different ways. I started studying medicine, didn't like the studies very much. I tried to become a documentary filmmaker to make the kind of documentaries that would show the people in the more developed countries what's wrong in developing countries, and in that way creating awareness and maybe trying to raise funds for organizations that were doing something about that. Nobody was interested in that kind of documentaries in the Netherlands at the time that I tried. So for a while I stayed with in the television industry. I was a floor manager, had a great time, was fun. But later, during a extended holiday in Laos, I saw the poverty again. I saw how children from very poor families would not have the opportunity to get out of poverty and create a better life for themselves. So when I saw that, and this was in 2004, I decided to do it in a different way. And that's where I am now. So by helping communities, empowering communities, empowering organizations and projects to do good for their own communities. Yeah.
You've been, you founded the PCF since 2011, and you've been in the humanitarian world for decades, and you've seen poverty in many parts of the world and also try to help change that. Have you figured out what's the secret to eliminating poverty?
Oh, that's it. No, I haven't found that. It's and I do not pretend to have the answers to the problems of the world. We are very much focused on what we can do. There's so much going on in the world, especially at the moment again. I wished we could do a lot more than we can do. But what we can do for a growing number of people is what keeps us going. And we can see that creating opportunities for those communities can really help these communities. And the only secret that I would have is if there would be many, many, many more organizations like ours, or if there would be a lot more initiatives like ours. There are many, of course, but I think that's the only way. If people stand up and help other people. That's what I think is what would make the world a better place, I would say. And we are doing this in a small part of the world. It's what we can do, and I'm very happy that we are, and grateful that we can do something at least for, like I said, a growing group of people. Last year, it was close to 15,000 people we've been able to help in all kinds of ways. Yeah.
Because you don't do just the PCF does more than just education help, right? So education, health, nutrition, sanitation, different areas. And I also know that you guys do emergency aid during crisis. Mm-hmm. So for those kind of emergency situation, how do you manage it? Disasters, political situations, different things. Like, is it more immediate on what do you need now to survive? Or is it for rehabilitation or teaching them how to connect with other people? What kind of approach is that?
Maybe all of the above, but we work with partners that we have been working for quite some time already. So if there are partner organizations that are working in situations where there are emergencies, we listen to them because they know where the help is needed most and where they can make the best use of the resources that we are able to give to them. And yes, it can be food, it can be medication, it can be also education, because if people are in a situation where it's impossible to go to school, if children cannot go to school because of the circumstances they live in, they are open and at risk of many kinds of exploitation, and having the ability to live a more or less normal life in abnormal circumstances will at least do something to protect children from being exploited. So those are the basic things that we do in terms of emergency aid, indeed, food, shelter, medication, whatever it is need that we learn from our partners that they need to improve the situation of the people that they're helping. And for instance, here also recently had floodings in Chiang Mai province, and we have not been doing a huge scale emergency operation. We don't have those resources, but we found out that there were families who lost their mattresses and could not get food support for a while, and kitchen utensils, etc., etc. So we did that as well for people in dire need. Yeah,
trying to eliminate poverty, it's not a small feat.
Nope.
Yeah, what has been the most challenging part in doing your work?
Whoa. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, of course, finding sufficient funds. The needs are getting bigger and bigger, unfortunately. So in recent emails that I sent out to friends of mine who were asking what I'm doing, is talking about that. The less aid is being given in some circumstances, and the needs are bigger. So what I wrote to several of my friends was, I want to win the lottery. So it's always difficult to find sufficient funds to help all the people who come to us that we know need help. That's a huge challenge. I think that would be the biggest challenge, because we have everything in place to make sure that the support that we are giving reaches the people who need it the most. We have a very well thought through and very thorough due diligence process to make sure that the help reaches the most vulnerable. There's never a 100% guarantee, of course, but when I set up the organization, when I set up Philanthropy Connections Foundation, I was very skeptical about charity organizations, foundations, nonprofit organizations, etc. There's so much that can go wrong, and there is a lot that goes wrong. So when I set up the organization, I wanted it to be an organization where I would feel comfortable enough to donate to myself, because everything is done in the right way. that is not really a huge challenge anymore because we've got everything in place to make sure that happens. Now the biggest challenge is indeed to get sufficient funds in so that we can use the knowledge that we have about the people that we want to support and the organization project that we want to support to indeed help them. Yeah.
It must also require a lot of resources, human resource, to execute this kind of level of zero. Because I know that you have 80 projects recently. How many projects you've done?
On an annual basis, we have between 25 and 30 different projects.
Okay.
Not 80.
That is a lot to manage. Yes. And then your organization, how big is it? And how do you function? There's so many moving parts to make this work.
Yeah. Well, what helps us is that we do not implement any of the projects ourselves. We believe in the power of the local communities and local leadership. People, like I said before, who live in the communities, who know their communities, they speak the language, they know the culture, they know what the real problems are, and they know how to solve the problems and what problems they can face when they're doing the work that they're doing. So what we are doing is try to select the right projects, the worthy causes, and stay in touch with the implementers, with the organizations, to make sure that the work that is being done by them keeps on meeting the requirements. Yes, we do a very thorough due diligence process. So before we start supporting a project, we know that the help will be given in the most efficient and effective way. But we still monitor and evaluate the results and the work of the project. So that takes up quite a bit of time from our projects team. But we don't have to implement the projects ourselves. In that way, we can do a lot more than if we would be implementing a project ourselves, because that's a day job. And our day job is to find the support, and to help the projects by keeping an eye on them, asking them for reports that we need to show our sponsors as well. But that's the way we work. 25 to 30 different projects, we can do it with a group of 14 people because the people on the ground, they implement everything. They are the ones that are doing the work, the field work.
So your journey from you went to medical school and you tried to help people in the way that you thought that's the best way, and into documentary filmmaking and towards being a floor director for Dutch TV. And did you have a light bulb moment where, charity, humanitarian donation is what I want to do?
Yeah. definitely. I mean, like I said, the plants were seeded during my first trip overland to India, where I saw that much poverty. It was already in me because I saw before I went overland to India and made that journey, I saw a lot of injustice already. We've got plenty of media in the Netherlands where we were confronted with what is wrong in the world. So I knew that already. But for me to make the final decision to indeed start, putting my money where my mouth is, came in 2004 when I was on an extended holiday in Laos and I saw the poverty again. So if you're talking about a bolt of lightning, maybe that is what made the final push towards where I am now at this moment. Yeah.
Have you always enjoyed traveling, meeting people? Yeah. I think the more you travel, the horizon get broader.
Hmm. No, absolutely true. Yeah, the it's meeting people from many different cultures as well in different countries. It was an eye opener. You can imagine. I was 18 years old and I first traveled through many Western countries. I traveled through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, finally in India. For 18-year-old young man, it is an eye opener, and it was that experience, I think, also that, like I said, planted the seed. There is no them and us. I see there is a them and us in terms of opportunities that people have. I was lucky to be born in a country that in a rich country, you can say that. And even though the Netherlands have their problems as well, I saw many other problems in developing countries. And it was good to communicate with so many people in these countries. And it made it easier for me also to do the work that I'm doing now, communicating with peoples from all, during my work as television as well, with all, how do you say that, walks of life and so many different cultures. It's it makes things easier to do work that I'm doing at the moment.
The Netherlands have good infrastructure for their people, right? The university, isn't it free for most people, or like very low cost? Yeah. I think
it's a very long time ago that I went to university. I don't know what the situation is at the moment, but I think it's not free. When I was there, I had to take a loan, but it was possible to get a loan. I had to pay it back later as well, and I think that is still the case. Either you can pay it or you can get a loan from the government. To be honest, I'm not fully aware of what the situation is at the moment. But yeah, the infrastructure is good. I think we've got excellent schools, ranging all the way from kindergarten up to university level. I was lucky to be born in a country like that and getting all the opportunities that I got.
With the work that you're doing now with PCF, do you have any work and association and support from your country of origin, the Netherlands? Do they work together, or like, is there a program either with government or certain organization that connect with you?
From the government, we get support from a lot of private people, companies, and some foundation in the Netherlands as well. In terms of the Dutch government, not so much, but I must say that we have a great supporter for our work in the Dutch ambassador and the Dutch embassy. Almost from the start, all the ambassadors, the Dutch ambassadors to Thailand, have been very helpful. And in November last year, the current Dutch ambassador and his spouse invited us to use their residence for a huge gala dinner fundraiser to raise money for us. So grateful. Yeah, absolutely. Very grateful to them. They love our work. One of the ambassadors visited one of our projects as well. And his spouse is a goodwill ambassador for us as well. And he's
amazing.
Yeah, very lucky again. And he also, this goodwill ambassador, wants to give back because he's from a an underprivileged background. I wouldn't say underprivileged, but he had hardships in life, and he wanted to give back to the community. So he is a huge supporter of the work that we do, and he's been instrumental in making it work at the gala dinner at the at his residence. And the ambassador's residence, yeah. And of course, I mean, it's good to be endorsed by the embassy. It shows us that, if I may say so, we are doing things right, and being endorsed by not only the embassy but also by quite a few companies, also Thai companies, by now here in Thailand. I think we're doing things right, and it's always good to find out that people are willing to help us, endorse our work, etc. Yeah.
In the similar ways that you do the border language programs, I want to know more about the ethnic people inside Myanmar, the IDP, the refugees, and other different programs that you do, because you're based in Thailand and then you're trying to reach out and then work in a different country. So how is it done?
Okay, like I said, all the projects that we do in Cambodia, in Burma, and in Thailand, we work with partners who support, who implement the work. So what we do is we listen to what they think is most needed within their communities, and we listen very carefully to what their plans are and how they believe it would help their communities. And many of the projects that we support are indeed education projects in some circumstances, or in some occasions also with emergency aid indeed. But it all goes through our partners. And the multilingual education that we're talking about, we don't have a multilingual education program inside Myanmar. That is all based here in Thailand. That's that one organization that we support. And I think if people do get across the border, if they become migrants or refugees in the country, and they want to get a legal status, there are other organizations that do that. But if they're in a program that supports them to get a better education, that's where we can help as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The it is not just the language that you, the organization you connect, it's not just the language, right? Because it's the empowering ethnic minorities. One of the projects that you do in a rural Lahu ethnic community, there is not even local school that existed. So how would you seek for these kind of rural area? Is there somebody who speaks the ethnic language, the mother tongue language that you would find in the community? So do you have all these resources? Are your employees all well-versed in these ethnic languages, or do you find through connections, really?
Yeah, connections, yeah. Are you talking about the two schools that we built? We've built two new schools, and we've renovated and reconstructed, helped reconstruct other schools in several states in Myanmar. You mentioned Lahu. There is an organization that we work with, and that organization has a staff who speaks English, and we work with them. And they put us in the right direction of where to build the two schools that we actually built. So it is through them we are communicating with this organization in English or in Thai, and they help us to find the places where the schools are needed, and that like with every other project as well, we do a very thorough due diligence process. We get all the information we need from our partners, and then we help them with the resources that they need.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever use your skills from past life as a documentary filmmaker in this role at PCF?
Well, a bit, somehow. I mean, there is a Dutch colleague of mine who owns his own video production company, and they visit us every now and then. They accompany us to projects, and they produce the videos. Now, we also have a communications team. That same person who's been helping us with our videos of our project donated a video camera to us, and we have a communications team who's using them. And with my background in television, I can help I do help our communications team to review the videos that they produce, give some tips to improve and edit the videos to make them even better. Yeah. So, yeah. But it's mainly floor manager, there's a lot of communication needed for that kind of work. And that kind of communication is also what I've been doing during my time as the director of our organization. You communicate with a lot of people. And so my history as somebody in the communications industry, media, does help me to get done what needs to be done here in this field as well.
You said that one of the biggest challenges is to find sufficient fundings to do all that you want to do and all that you want to help. How do you fundraise? What's the main way that you fundraise for?
There are so many different ways we do that. Of course, at first there is the network. I've always been a networker. So when I first came here, I sent out newsletters to my network, and the people who received the newsletters started supporting us. Through my network, we came to know other foundations as well, who do not implement anything themselves or are not working here, but they have funds, in many cases old money. So we talk with them. We have the Netherlands Thai Chamber of Commerce, which is an organization here based in Bangkok. They have helped us in many different ways as well, also connecting us with Dutch companies and Thai companies who operate here in Thailand. Like I said, there was the help of the Dutch embassy for the gala dinner. There are so many different ways also to raise funds. But what's very important to us also is transparency. Of course, we get a lot of money in that are not earmarked for projects. But if we find a sponsor or a potential sponsor that would like to support one of our projects, what we do is write a very, very well written project proposal that shows the ins and outs, the why, the what, and where of the projects that we want to support. And we send that out to potential sponsors, and we're open to their questions. So that is that all of that is helping us in raising funds. Yeah. And again, like each project has its own dynamic, also each sponsor have their own story.
Since your organization seeks for the other organizations in need, was the pandemic a really difficult time for you to maneuver?
Well, we were fearful that during COVID we would lose quite a bit of funding. I mean, we had no idea what was going to happen. As it turned out to be, COVID, in that sense, did completely the other thing. We got more funding during the time of COVID than before. And I think one of the reasons, that's what I said as well. But one of the thing that made that happen, I think, is that very soon after things got really bad here in Thailand, was that we started a emergency food program. So, to be honest, here I am at the moment. It's a national office holiday in Thailand. And I am here at my weekend office at Monsoon Tea, which is an incredible tea company that produces tea grown in harmony with the forest. And the owner of this restaurant is a is a good friend of mine, and it's a tea company, but they also have a restaurant that they were having a hard time during COVID. But I asked him, the owner of the restaurant and the tea company, if we could do something together to help people who've lost their jobs in Chiang Mai with meals. And he immediately said yes. And over the course of 7 months, we've produced almost 40,000 meals to feed people in the direct vicinity of his restaurant. People heard about that. They even from the Netherlands, people who had a link with Thailand, they wanted to help us to feed people. So all in all, we succeeded in raising more funds for initially our food program. We also gave food packages to about 5,000 people in 35 different communities in Thailand. And many of the new sponsors who found us through that, that food program stayed with us and are supporting other projects as well now.
That's surprising, but it's unpleasantly surprised that mm-hmm. this is the case, that you get more funding than you expected.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm very, again, I'm very grateful. And it was a great opportunity also to be working, to cooperating with Monsoon Tea. Absolutely a great company that is helping the local community and the environment as well. So that partnership brought us a lot of good as well.
Yeah, sometimes when you face hardship as a humanity altogether, everybody wants to, they have this awakening that we gotta do something to help each other.
Absolutely.
And I guess that's how people are more drawn to donate more. And mm-hmm. we crave connection. During the pandemic, we were so isolated and we were all feeling the doom that when is this virus gonna be over, and is there gonna be a cure? And I guess that's what pushed people to donate more and want to do more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I said, I was surprised, but mainly glad and grateful that we could do something, and it helped us to even grow bigger as an organization as well. And we can do more now than we did before COVID. Yeah.
Mm. With the 2021 coup in Myanmar, I imagine there will be a large influx of refugee towards the border. Mm-hmm. Has that impact, or like, has there been more needs for organization to reach out, or for you to find organizations that are more in need in that area in terms of refugee and other needs?
We've been working with existing partners who are also impacted by what is going on in Myanmar at the moment. And we basically, because we are at a certain level of support in terms of funds as well that comes in, and the organizations that we used to work with already in educational program, they came to us with request for emergency aid now as well. And there's been an influx into the projects that we were supporting already, and we are trying to help them as much as we can. But like I said, we need a lot more money to be able to help all the people that need help. So at this moment, only on very limited way can we do more for potentially new partners. We're a small organization, and we can do only so much. And we work with the partners that we trust already and help them if they see needs that are growing bigger because of the situation in Myanmar at the moment. Yeah.
And how can our listeners help? So how can we make the donation? Do we reach out to your organization and get connected? Because I know that you have a tradition for fundraising for birthdays on social media. So tell me more about those.
Well, if people want to donate, if they're hearing this and they're interested in donating, I hope that in your podcast you will show our website, and there's a donate button there, and there are many ways in which you can donate. If your listeners are mainly from the United States, we work together with Myriad, formerly King Baudouin Foundation, and supporters in the United States can donate to us through them to get tax efficient donations as well. So they are a 501c3 organization, and people get all the normal tax exemptions, the tax how do you call them, the tax
like a tax incentive, I think.
But it's all, if you go to our website, click the donate button, and you can see all these opportunities. But it's if there are people who really want to find out more about us and see if they can help with a certain project, please get in touch. On the website, you will also find our email address and all the requests for more information are answered the same day, or at least within 3 days. And if they want to get in touch with me and ask more questions about what people can do to help, I will gladly get in touch by email or even by phone call or whatever is the best way for people who want to help.
So either through donation or with resources or skills, right? People can help in many different ways with the project. Do you have a lot of volunteers, or is everybody more of a full-time employee working?
We do have volunteers who do not work in our projects, because we very much believe that the project should be run by local people who speak the language, mm-hmm. who know the culture, and mm-hmm. who are there and who will stay there. We have worked and are still working with volunteers in our office. Depends on the skills that they have, we can put them to use. But it is complicated, because all the volunteers need a work permit to be able to work in Thailand. But there are people who also work for us locally, doing fundraisers, talking about us. That's basically, if people get to know us and they want to spread the word, we have people. Even one of our most loyal sponsors is going to churches and talk about us, and she's asking for funds for our organization as well. That's also one of the things that people can do. But to work in projects, only in very selected projects, and if people really bring something that local people cannot do themselves. Yeah. We do not believe in people coming here and building schools. local people, local companies are able to build the schools if they have the money. So that's what we believe in as well.
Thank you for giving time, and I want to continue support in the alleviating poverty in your mm-hmm. fight towards that, and for the donations and all the work that you do. I hope mm-hmm. you get over your biggest challenge of funding, and then yes. you can do more of this and also connect with other organizations and continue doing the great work.
Thank you so much. That's very, very kind of you. And indeed, this can help as well. Maybe it's not winning the lottery, but if we can, through your podcast, get some more sponsors, people who are willing to help, that would be awesome already. So thank you very much for your time and for giving us this kind of spotlight. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Insight Myanmar Podcast. The stories and conversations we share are meant to inform, inspire, and deepen our understanding of the rich tapestry of experiences that can be found in Myanmar. And as you might imagine, producing this podcast requires a great deal of time, effort, and resources. So if you've gained some value from what you've just heard, we ask you to consider paying it forward. Your support can continue to ensure that we're able to produce and share more episodes like the one you just heard. Every donation directly fuels our ability to reach out to a more diverse range of guests, record their powerful stories, and bring them to life for listeners around the world. So by contributing, you're not just supporting this podcast, you're also creating opportunities for others to benefit from and hearing these conversations down the road. So if you believe in the work we're doing and want to see it continue, please visit insightmyanmar.org/donation. Together, let's keep this conversation going. Yaran nangka yau nyana dadu ya danang dari ganesa de mana we kada besa yana besa yo hoba yaran nanda dayan nangana yaran nya dayan nampo da ba yaran nampo